D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5. The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and Connor Newt here with you on your drive home. We hope you are having a wonderful day. By the way, it occurred to me, I believe tomorrow is the one-year anniversary of our shift from the midday to the afternoon drive slot.
Okay.
1 year. So thank you to all of you who have been listening throughout the past year as we transitioned from 11 to 2 to 3 to 6. We've really enjoyed being on the air from 3 to 6 on your commutes home. So thank you, thank you, thank you. But yes, it occurred to me yesterday or some day over the weekend, I'm like, I feel like it's probably coming up close to 1 year. And I think it's 1 year tomorrow.
1 year tomorrow.
That we've
been. Anniversary.
Yes.
It's our anniversary. There you go.
Also, one thing that Connor noted about practice today that I do want to bring up. I've talked about this before. Big, big, big no-no, Titans fans. I know you love the new jerseys. They are sharp. Do not put players on those jerseys who did not wear those jerseys.
Ooh.
Connor told me you saw a couple of Steve McNair's.
Yep, I saw those too.
Too many of them.
Nope.
But that's different. Steve McNair's different.
No, it...
He's the Ring of Honor. He's MVP. It's a little bit different. And he did wear those colors, by the way.
Not those jerseys, though.
He did not wear that.
Know.
Yeah.
I know. I know.
With Adam, I stand.
Yeah. I know Steve McNair is a beloved figure, but no, do not do it. Do not do it. I don't want to see any, I don't know, Will Levis. Well, he's on the team right now. He might not be on the team. So we'll see. We talked about Will Levis earlier in the show. But y'all were out at practice today. It was the first practice with pads of training camp. Of course, a lot of focus on Cam Ward's performance. Reading here from Gentry Estes' recap on the Tennessee, and he wrote that Cam Ward had his best practice of camp. Estes writes, quote, "From the jump, Ward looked more decisive and confident in flinging passes deeper down the field. He found Calvin Ridley for a big play, beating cornerback Cordell Flott. He hit Wandale Robinson several times in the middle of the field for nice gains. He had some nice throws and completed a higher percentage than what we'd been seeing from him going back to summer workouts, so that was encouraging. What was not encouraging, two sloppy interceptions from Ward that looked a lot like duplicates. Ward was intercepted early by Amani Hooker on a play where he was flushed from the pocket, rolled right, and then tried to throw back to the middle of the field. Evidently, he didn't learn from the mistake because Ward tried the same throw later in practice, rolling right and throwing back left across his body. Jermaine Johnson picked off that throw." And Derek, you said earlier, I asked you at the top of the show, standouts, good and bad, from the first few days of training camp for those of us like me who were off last week and weren't really paying attention when training camp opened. And you singled out the quarterbacks among those who have not stood out for the right reason. So let's I know there's going to be a lot of attention on the interceptions that Cam Ward threw in practice. How would you evaluate his overall performance today?
I think today was one of those days where, yes, he may – throws out there that you want to see him make. But also, he did have two errant passes that, you know, one, the second one he shouldn't have thrown because it resembled the first one. But you can take that and sort of put it aside and see everything else he was doing. Again, he put some balls in tight spaces, what you want to see. He hit Calvin Ridley over the middle on the end route. There was just a laser to his back shoulder, and Ridley made a hell of a catch. So he's out there, and he is throwing dimes just about everywhere. But also, you know, you can see it's still a progress for him. So, yeah, I think he had a good day. It wasn't great. But I guarantee you, he's spending a lot of time on those mistakes that he made in practice, rather than those things that we saw, that everybody saw, and we wowed over him. I guarantee you, he's in the meeting room with Daboll and everyone, and they're really asking him, like, "What did you see?" Because these things are going to happen again, and you got to make sure that you've been, you know, sort of put through the ringer in a sense on what you're seeing out there, so we all can be on the same page, because you don't want You know, you do it once, okay, you do it again, you don't want it to happen after that.
Willie, you've been out of practice many times so far. Your assessment of Cam Ward today and overall since training camp opened.
I've been watching this. When he went, because I know he's been working a lot on footwork and mechanics. And so I've been watching for that. When he plants his foot and really rips it and he's on balance, man, the results are impressive. I know he's also working on getting the, you know, quick decision. Let's get the ball out quick. Let's not have that clock go off in your head. And I think that they're, I see them trying to work on a lot of quick hitters like that, to where he's gonna be in rhythm and throwing, so much so that I think there's been some throws that he's made up his mind before the guy's actually open, just because he wants to get that ball out. So I think that's something they're working on. So the mechanics, man, like some of the throws you were referencing today, it was that third and long. Somebody had a false start. It was like third and 15 from the 18 or something. And boy, did he drill one in there to Ridley. And I'm like, what do you do? How do you defend that? You can't defend that because he's throwing lasers. And I do think Tate and Robinson have a pretty good feel for catching the heaters, sometimes the high heaters. But the thing, the one thing that he's got to stop is the sidearm across the body, because that's when you're losing the mechanics. And as I said in the first hour of the show, Patrick Mahomes, I think, probably ruined it for a lot of quarterbacks and people who teach quarterbacks, because there's a lot of young quarterbacks who have watched Patrick Mahomes for the last 10 or 15 years make these throws that go against the rules of the old adages, the time-tested adages. You don't throw across your body. You don't throw against the grain. You don't throw late over the middle. Those three right there, all three were in play in the two interceptions, both interceptions. He threw it across his body, he threw against the grain, and it was late over the middle. But Patrick Mahomes, you can put 100 plays together over the course of his career where makes it work in key situations. So that's what I wonder, and that was Teron's question today to Robert Saleh. How do you feel about that? Do you want to take away a potential weapon for a young quarterback, or do you want to say, just take that out of your bag? Take that club out of your bag. Don't worry about it. We're going to come out ahead if you just don't ever do that.
He's moving around in the pocket well, too. He has some opportunities to move inside the pocket, get, you know, climb the pocket, and he ran on one, slid and got a first down, and then he operated and moved out of the pocket and made a throw on another. So he's still working on moving, and I think a lot of that is going to get better to him navigating through the pocket, feeling comfortable with the guys around him at his feet, and either deciding to run or extend it a little bit to try to get a pass down the field.
So this is not something I normally say, but I heard Aaron Rodgers say something fascinating. And not what he said today on the Pat McAfee show. And maybe we'll discuss Aaron Rodgers tomorrow, because I have some thoughts. But I saw a clip from a podcast. Unfortunately, the name of the podcast is escaping me. Maybe I'll find it, because I do want to give proper credit. But we were talking about this during OTAs, when Cam Ward's accuracy issues were bubbling back up to the surface, and everybody was tracking his completion percentage. And we've talked about the, you know, the issues with that in terms of evaluating a quarterback's performance in minicamp and in training camp. But Aaron Rodgers did a podcast when he was talking about incompletions, and incompletions being perhaps the most valuable tool for a quarterback in practice. Here's what Aaron Rodgers had to say.
It just goes back to stuff you've worked on in practice and being able to draw back on those experiences where you're not operating in a perfect environment with no defenders. You know, it's like, no, give me something out there, just a shadow, so I can feel what it feels like to throw right the back of his head on a back shoulder. And again, I think that's where you grow, is where you put yourself in the most adverse situations. And to circle back to the point, when coaches and or players are way more concerned about what it looks like than how it feels, it's really hard to grow mm-hmm. because you're just going to be hoping for perfect passes in practice.
Yeah.
Instead of like, oh, you missed that one. Perfect. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what you want.
Right.
Because here's now you've got a feeling. Mm-hmm. Oh, shoot. I was a little on my front foot on that one. I was, mm-hmm. you know, my hitch was a little too much, or I got to have more weight on the back, mm-hmm. or I got to put a little bit more air on this ball when it's 25 yards outside the numbers. Like, those are the ones that, you know, like working with young quarterbacks, I'm like, that's the best rep mm-hmm. possible. Now just remember that one. Mm-hmm. So when it comes up next time, you can make the right throw.
By the way, the podcast, the Keep Hammering Collective with Cameron Haynes, mm-hmm. who is a bow hunting athlete, quote, training intensively each and every day to become the ultimate predator. Unlike our friend, the ultimate predator, big Predators fan. I thought that was insightful.
I think that's Aaron Rodgers. I think D-Mace, he's mm-hmm. talking about the crux of Teron's question to Robert Saleh is practice time. Do you allow somebody to be creative, get outside of the mechanics a little bit, especially when you're in that developmental mm-hmm. stage? I thought that was really interesting of Rodgers. Now, Rodgers is a little bit like Mahomes, mm-hmm. right? One of the things that made him great was his ability to improvise. Mm-hmm. You'd love for Cam Ward to get to that point someday, but he's made a lot of mistakes doing it. So at what point do you say these are the rules? As Saleh said, non-negotiables. There are certain non-negotiables. So how far do you take the non-negotiable at this stage of Ward's career?
Yeah, I just think, there's this deal with it be, you know, looking a certain way and then obviously a feel. But either way, they all got to match up. It all has to match up eventually. Your feel and, you know, that look has to match up, because if that look ain't there, I don't care how you feel, you're going to throw an interception. If the look's not there, you're going to have to go somewhere else. But I just think it's a combination of both. That's why when we talked last week, Willie, and because Heimerdinger would always say, listen, you have leeway, but it's within the confines of what we're trying to do. But as long as you and Steve are on the same page, that's all that matters. As long as you, and that's what it is with a quarterback. Yeah, as long as you and a play caller are on the same page, and that person that you're throwing it to, as long as y'all are on the same page, then yeah, this notion of it's about a feel, you're right. It is about a feel. But I can have that feeling if I ain't on the same page and they don't have the same feeling, it ain't going to work. You know, so yes, he's right. But then it's a little bit more than just a feeling, because everybody got to have that same feeling. And fortunately enough for Aaron Rodgers, he's been on like the right page with his guys when he's been with them. And that's typically
because
when
he was
at Green
Bay. Everywhere. Yeah. I mean, Alan Lazard stayed in the exactly, NFL for yeah. many, many years because he was Aaron Rodgers' guy. But so
you're,
I digress.
I think it's a great point, because you're adding the nuance of playing quarterback. Mm-hmm. It's not just your decision. It's the decision that affects the, mm-hmm. the 10 other guys on the
exactly.
field, right? Especially the receivers. Like, there are coaches in basketball that I can relate to. I played for a coach that was closer to Bobby Knight. You're only taking the shots within the offense that are good shots. Right, you have to be there were strong rules, mm-hmm. and as a shooter, there different guys handled it different ways. But as a shooter, sometimes you're like, "Is this a good shot?" As you're mm-hmm. raring to shoot, you don't want to be thinking about that, right? You want to be loose, you want to be confident. And if it's a tweener, if it's like, "I'm not sure this is a good mm-hmm. shot," is coach going to be mad? That probably hurts my chances of making that shot. There are other coaches, like Bruce Pearl, would be an example of. I want the shooter to have all the confidence. Mm-hmm. Rick Pitino would be the same way, I think. Like, let shooter shoot. And if there are a couple bad shots in there, that's all right. I'll live with that. That's what Bobby Knight, and my coach was more like that, Eddie Fogler, like, I can't deal with that. If you take a bad shot, you're coming out. I'm taking you out right now, because that's where Bruce Pearl would be like, shoot it. Couple bad shots, that's okay. I'll tell you, I think that's a bad shot, but I don't want you thinking about what I think when you shoot the ball. Both have their merits, right? Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is where Cam Ward is on some of these throws where he gets out of his mechanics. If he drops down, throws sidearm across his body, I've wondered, can he get to a point where he knows when to do it and it's going to be a plus? It might take some two interception days at practice to get through that, right? And there, he may never get through that. That's the question for Daboll. Is like, what? How do I teach that in the meantime?
But it's a lot of it. A lot of it has to do because again, you never want to take a quarterback's ability to make plays away from him. You don't. But what you hope happen is, like you said, Willie, he understands when to make those throws. Like my first year, I may not make a sidearm throw. Everything may be one way. But then as I'm learning defenses, as I'm learning players, I know, well, if they're playing Jacksonville, the first time you figure I can't do it. Then the second time you come out and say, okay, I can make some of these throws. Why? Because now you've had time to go back and assess and look at the team you're playing. Now you pick up on some of their tendencies. So when I'm rolling out to my right, do I have the ability to throw a sidearm because of where the guy is at or how he's approaching me? So I wouldn't take away his ability to throw sidearm, but it's the more I see, the better I get at doing those things. That's why, you know, Patrick Holmes is so, he's done it so many times. So we may think it's careless, but he don't see it as that way because he's done it so many times and he knows exactly what's going to happen more times than not.
And that was, I think, that's what I took out of Rodgers' statement that we just played, is in the practice, it doesn't matter if you throw some interceptions. But I get the gauge of what I can do and what I can't do. The only way to do that is to try some throws in practice that might risk looking bad.
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans and Cam Ward. Two interceptions today in practice, of course. That is the headline. But Willie, Derek, and Connor were all out there and thought overall he had a solid, if not inconsistent, performance today. 615-737-1025 coming up next. I hate to do this to you, Derek Mason and Joe Rexroad and Jake Lyman. We have a lot of Tigers fans on the air at this station. Tarek Skubal traded from the Tigers to the dreaded Dodgers. Are the Dodgers ruining baseball? No, but we'll discuss it coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. And it was a sad day for multiple members of our staff. Joe Rexroad, Jake Lyman, our very own Derek Mason, when the Detroit Tigers traded Tarek Skubal to the dreaded, the hated Los Angeles Dodgers. And as you might imagine, this has led to a lot of what Ken Rosenthal wrote at The Athletic. Anti-Dodger hysteria. As Major League Baseball seemingly careens toward a lockout. And a lot of that is going to have to do with whether Major League Baseball institutes a salary cap. And I've read a lot of interesting think pieces about the Skubal trade and what it means for the fate, the future of baseball. And I do have some thoughts on this. I want to start, however, with our resident baseball fan, our biggest baseball fan here, Willie Donick. Number one, your thoughts on the trade. And two, what does this mean for the bigger picture of baseball? Are the Dodgers ruining baseball?
It's going to be, I think, a very central example that will set the stage for the labor battle that is going to happen, that I really hope that both sides could be sensible. Because unlike some past negotiations, I really think baseball has done a great job of navigating a lot of their issues. I think the product is really good. The pitch clock has been a huge hit. The challenge system, I think, is good. They're trying to put more action in the game. There's more stolen bases. There's more room for athleticism. People still strike out too much, but that's just, it's not going anywhere. Pitchers are throwing harder than they've ever thrown. So there's a lot of really healthy things about baseball. But competitive balance is coming back into the picture now. And when this kind of deal gets made, whether they like it or not, and I was very disappointed last night with the Sunday Night Baseball broadcast. I thought there would be a really good on-air debate, but the players on the panel, almost, you could tell, they didn't want to touch it. Clayton Kershaw was on the panel. There was a Red Sox representative, Oral Hershiser, was on there. What they do on Sunday night now is they take a broadcaster from each of the teams and put them with Jason Benetti, who's an excellent up-and-coming play-by-play guy. I think it's a really good broadcast. But they didn't want to get into it. I could tell because the players still are of the old school. They don't want a salary cap. But I think it's time to really get with it. And you can justify a lot of things. The Dodgers are smarter than everybody. But you can't tell me that they don't have a huge advantage over the competition because of the resources they have. And this was the point, the central point. The Brewers, who the Sounds are their affiliate, right in our backyard. We set the table. D-Mace and I talked about this before the trade happened because the Brewers were interested in Scooble too. And the point is made, the Brewers have the same record as the Dodgers. They're won in just as many games. They could have traded for Scooble. They had the farm system to do it. Scooble, as a rental, was affordable even for the Brewers. That's all well and good. But there are so many other things that show you why the Dodgers have the gap between what they're spending, what everybody else is spending. It's a huge advantage. For competitive balance, they've got to narrow the gap between the highest paid teams and the lowest paid teams.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. How did the Dodgers get the deal that they got? Because they're saving a lot of money based on that. The whole
on their broadcasting.
Yeah, the whole
for Scooble.
No. I'm just talking about the Dodgers, the team, because they get some type of tax break or something. They get for was I reading it right for a franchise going into bankruptcy. And they don't get taxed as much for, I think it lasts for over 10 years. It's to 2039 where the contract runs out, where they only get taxed a certain amount, which then helps them because they get taxed as if they were a lower bracket team rather than what they are making now.
June Lee reported, because the Dodgers went bankrupt, MLB agreed to tax their TV money as if they were still broke.
Exactly.
That lets the Dodgers keep about $66 million more every year than they otherwise would. Wow. This exception runs through 2039.
As if in that market you needed a break
and
like that.
And so there are, even with a salary cap, they still would get a huge benefit.
And that was my question to you, Willie. And many people point to the Dodgers as a sign of everything that's wrong with the modern baseball economic system. The deferred payments and the
the counterpoint is everybody can do deferred payments.
Right. Mm-hmm. The Dodgers are a forward thinking organization. They've got a great drafting and scouting department, and yes, they're willing to spend a ton of money on bringing in the best players. My thought about the salary cap is how much difference would it actually make? Because we're seeing this in the NHL right now, Willie. The salary cap, a hard salary cap in the NHL, is skyrocketing. So every team has the same amount of money to spend, theoretically. But we all know that the Toronto Maple Leafs can spend a hell of a lot more than the Columbus Blue Jackets. So even if the Los Angeles Dodgers have to play with a salary cap, they are going to still be able to spend up to the cap. While the Tampa Bay Rays or the Milwaukee Brewers or the Cleveland Guardians, they're not going to be able to spend that much money. So, how much does it really change anything?
I think what I want to see is it narrow, because in hockey, I think it's the best system going. Because, and especially us being in the market that we're in Nashville, I'm so glad. I do remember in the early years of the Predators covering the team when there was no salary cap. And you did wonder, how are they ever going to make it work when the disparity between what the top teams spend and what they spend is unbelievable. They sat out an entire year to get the salary cap. And I'm thankful, because that's the only reason the Predators flourish. You don't hear small market with the Predators. You don't really hear small market in very many cities, because the way the system is set up, the gap between the big market teams and the smaller market teams isn't that big of a thing. Whereas in baseball, how much do you think the Dodgers have the most payroll right now? How much do you think it is compared to the Brewers, who are the 20th highest paid payroll, and they have basically the same record right now? The Brewers have done an amazing job with less. But what's the gap in your mind?
$300 million.
Yeah.
What do you think, Derek?
I would say it's probably more than that, maybe four.
Adam is close. The Dodgers' payroll is $431 million and change. The Brewers, $147 million. Mm-hmm. So that's almost three times, right? Or that's over double, right, of the payroll. And you're saying, well, who cares? That's great. The Brewers are still winning. But in a playoff series, it's different. And how you get there is different. For example, here's the Dodgers. Here's what you can do when you spend $432 million. Tyler Glasnow has pitched seven games this whole year. He's on the 60-day IL. They have so much talent, it's okay. They're bringing him along slow. He'll be there for the postseason. He is a weapon. He's pitched seven games the whole year. I don't think, okay, Edwin Diaz, who they took from the Mets, he's pitched nine games this whole year. He's been injured. Mm-hmm. They're saving him. They're going to get him back for the postseason. And Blake Snell will be the third example I'll use. Blake Snell has pitched one game this year. So those three guys have played. Those are three pitchers. They have gotten a combined 3, 11, 30, 40. So that's 51 innings for three guys. You know what they're paying those guys? Tyler Glasnow gets $32 million. Edwin Diaz gets $17 million. Blake Snell gets $27 million. The Brewers can't have three guys making that much money on the shelf pitching 11 games and 51 innings. That's the luxury that the Dodgers have. That's a huge competitive advantage. If you had a salary cap, they would have to be better and make better decisions. And they make great decisions. They don't need extra help. They are smart enough. It should be about how smart you deploy your resources and your depth. And not, hey, I can put a lot of guys making a lot of money on the shelf and it's no big deal as long as they're healthy in September and October.
The other counterpoint, Derek, is the entire premise of Moneyball is that competence alone can get the team far even without resources. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hate to do this to Willie Donick. He's having a rough day as it is. The New York Mets are trading every player who is living and breathing in that uniform. You can have a ton of resources and still be hot garbage.
Yeah.
Like the New York Mets are this season. Sorry, Willie. But, you know, the South, like, as someone who did and continues to in a different role cover the NHL, the salary cap in the NHL is just so simple to understand, right? You have this much, you have this much money, you can spend up to this much money, you can't spend any more money. The NFL and Major League Baseball, if you're not
and
like
basketball,
and basketball, if you're not like engrossed in it, man, it is hard to grasp all of it. But to me, like, I'm not sure how
in baseball. The simplicity is you can spend all you want. Mm-hmm. There's just a luxury tax once you hit a certain bar, and that helps fund the lower teams. And so this is the problem that the players have is, well, if you have a salary cap, then that's going to limit what the top players can make. And that's true. But what you make up for is if you force the bottom 10 teams to spend up to a floor – the players, I think, will come out better, in theory, at least for me.
One texter. Oh, go ahead, Derek.
No, I was just going to say you have to be able to and maybe it doesn't – maybe players don't see the benefit, but I think if you want your lead to continue to thrive, there has to be some type of salary cap within there. Do you throw out deferred money? Because right now the Dodgers have more deferred money than anybody. Yep. You know, moving forward. So that enables them to sign guys and stack their roster because they're paying a lot of money on the back end. Do they take away deferred contracts if you have a new collective bargaining? Listen, and then will it, in a sense, sort of control what players can ultimately make? Absolutely, but I think your game will thrive if you have some type of mechanism in place where everybody, from a money standpoint, now how much of it they spend, it has to be a percentage, but everybody seems to be on a even playing ground.
One texter says, any team in Major League Baseball could have offered a better deal than the Dodgers. The Brewers have the best farm system in baseball. They could have traded for Skubal. Any team can defer contracts. Most teams benefit from the Dodgers paying the luxury tax, including the Brewers. There needs to be a salary floor, not a cap. No one should fault the Dodgers for spending the resources they make without faulting the other teams that are making more money at the end of the season instead of paying for players.
Right. That is right out of the playbook of the Players Association. Mm-hmm.
I don't blame them. I don't either.
I think there's a happy median, though. There has to be an acknowledgement from the players that as much as they should be rewarded for Marvin Miller and that group sitting out and fighting for the right to free agency mm-hmm. and the right to – they were the forefront of players' associations. Like, they've done a tremendous job. But I think there has to be an acknowledgement that you've got it pretty good, and for the best part, for the best competitive balance for the game, and acknowledging that other leagues have a salary cap, that salary cap is not a death sentence. It's not this, oh my God, we can't ever have a salary cap. Get in the world that every other sport is. A salary cap is not a bad thing.
No.
But within that, mm-hmm. let's make it a win-win. Let's try to keep it. Let's keep it so that the players benefit, but at the same time, you gain competitive balance. The gap between the Dodgers, I just gave you the three guys that they can take a whole vacation as long as they're there for the last 2 months. That's a luxury that other teams don't have. Bring it back to the middle a little bit, one way or the other.
For kicks and giggles, when I knew we were having this conversation, I looked up the roster of the 2002 Detroit Red Wings, speaking of Detroit. That was pre-salary cap. That Red Wings team won the Stanley Cup, I believe, against the Carolina Hurricanes. That team with Steve Yzerman and Nick Lidstrom and Sergei Fedorov and Chris Chelios and Brendan Shanahan had a total payroll in 2002 of $66,293,750. Adjusted for inflation, that's more than $123 million today, which exceeds the NHL salary cap at the moment. So I just thought that was funny. 615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on the Tarek Skubal trade and what it means in the big picture for Major League Baseball, as it appears that baseball is careening toward a lockout of some kind in 2027. 615-737-1025. We'll take your reaction and wrap up the show coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, Connor Newt here with you, wrapping up our first show all together in 2.5 weeks. I feel like I want to do the, you know, the guy from Bare Naked Ladies. Yeah, it's been 2.5 weeks since we've all been together. But, you know, it's like riding a bike, right? Like, we haven't done a show all together in 2.5 weeks, but we all sat down, and it was like we never left.
Hey.
That's what happens when you've been working together for as long as
Sounds
we have.
Supposed to be.
Yes, precisely. Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Bear. Bear, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, guys, thanks for taking my call. Glad to have the dynamic team back together. It's a great listen. Yeah, as far as the MLB situation, I don't have an issue with the Dodgers collecting talent. Kind of like, say, anybody can do it. You got teams with $80 million payrolls, and they making money. They charging $35 for nachos and $80 for park. And they, I mean, you know, they got the money. They charging the fans either way. They just trying to hoard the cash. As far as I'm concerned, I just think, you know, you can have a floor. I mean, they probably should have a floor, and then just have a luxury tax over here. Because, you know, I'm always going to have a labor in them situations. Because, you know, the owners is make. They ain't never going to crack open the books. And because if I was the player association, that's the first thing I'm going to say. All right, y'all open up your books and show us what y'all making. Because y'all claiming y'all poor and y'all ain't got nothing. I believe that'll never happen. And yeah, it'll probably be a lockout. I'll miss a few games, but if they'll come to their senses. But, yeah, He should be a floor, make like $100-some million, and just have a luxury tax if you go over so much. Because I just, you know, as a person on the side of labor, I just ain't with no cap. We a free market society, and people should be able to make whatever somebody want to pay them. That's all I got, guys. Thank you. Have a great show.
Thanks,
Thank
Bear.
You, Bear. Appreciate it.
I'm just more coming from a competitive balance thing. In hockey, what mm-hmm. I like, is there one team in the league where you say, you know, that market has no chance to win? There's just, it just doesn't get discussed, right? It's your own fault, right? With because of the salary cap floor and the ceiling.
It's just how you choose to spend your money.
It's about who's the smartest with mm-hmm. the resources they have, because everybody yes. has relatively the same resources. Mm-hmm. Even though, like you said, there's a difference of what Toronto is generating
versus Columbus.
Mm-hmm. Versus Columbus. Those are two great examples. But still, because of the salary cap, Columbus has a chance if they're smart and if they do a good job. It's nowhere close to like the here's what happened today. The Marlins. And everybody will say, well, that's their own fault, they don't care. The Marlins have a winning record. And they were trading guys today. They're in contention. They could make it. But they still are not able to keep their best guys, sign their best guys to long-term deals because of they just have limitations to what they've been able to do. And some of it is their own fault. But I think if you could narrow that gap a little bit more, competitive balance would be better. I just don't I don't want to hear about 8 or 10 teams that start the year saying we're only going to spend less than a quarter of what the top teams spend. The gap should be narrower.
Brandy says, Ohtani took his deferring deal to multiple other teams, and the Dodgers jumped at it. Others could have said yes, unlike the Yankees and the Mets. Sorry, Willie. The Dodgers are smart and creative with their money choices. They get who they need. There needs to be a floor for sure to bring them up. Jerry says, if the owners are making so much money, how could the Dodgers go bankrupt?
Mm-hmm. I would like to see them remove that whole deferred money thing. Do you think they will do that, Willie? Because it does give other teams with deeper pockets an opportunity to backload. And when I mean backload, I'm talking about years and years down the line, where then they're paying, you know, on the back end rather than on the front end.
That's a really good question. The deferred money and what the texter said is true, that he was offering that to anybody. Deferred money, I guess, is like a double-edged sword to the mm-hmm. to the team.
Yeah.
Do you want to do that and be worried about, like, Bobby? We always make fun of the Mets have to pay Bobby Bonilla every July 1st. Mm-hmm. Some teams don't want to deal with that, but it is one way of doing business. I can't answer the question about the Dodgers going bankrupt. I don't remember when they went bankrupt, mm-hmm. really.
It must have been a while ago, because that contract is in place until 2039, I believe.
I'm not sure of the particulars.
Right, the owners aren't going broke. Let's put it that way. Like even the teams at the bottom, like the Marlins and like the Rays and teams like that, they're making money because of the system and because teams like the Mets and the Dodgers and some of the teams, they go over the luxury tax and that filters back into the smaller markets. But those teams still, a lot of them don't try to compete. Like I want to see them playing somewhat by the same set of rules of how you build a team, similar to the NHL. Nashville doesn't build their team any different than New York or Toronto because they have relatively the same resources to spend. Miami and Tampa, let's use Tampa and Milwaukee because they are small market teams that are doing really well. But they don't build their team anywhere near the same way that the Dodgers build their team. And it's out of survival, and they're really good at finding ways to survive and thrive. But I still think when the postseason starts, who's got a better chance of winning? It's not even close. The Dodgers are loaded compared to those teams.
I saw this report out of New England Patriots camp. A.J. Brown told NFL Network that he dislocated his thumb in Monday's practice, but he didn't miss any time. That's tough, Derek Mason, dislocating your thumb.
Yeah, painful too.
He said, what? The game is what it is. You're going to get bumps and bruises, and you have to keep going. I know it's practice, but I'm not coming out of practice. Thumb out of place, you keep going.
Well, I'm pretty sure, you know, he can work around the sore thumb, just catch it with your body. But I'm sure he wasn't full go after that. Because even with your thumb, you still got to be cautious. So, but hey, he's there to prove a point that he still got it.
Also, this happened last week when I was on vacation. Mike Vrabel bringing a puppy to a news conference. Did you guys see that? Did you guys
talk about that?
Of course.
I didn't see it. Wow.
I saw it. I didn't listen to the press conference. But
cute dog.
I mean, Vrabel, he's pulling out all the stops,
I
man.
I saw a lot of headlines. It's like, Mike Vrabel brings puppy to deflect questions about Diana Rossini. Like, you can't ask questions about Diana Rossini because look at this dog.
You sound like Ridiculousness on MTV.
Oh, that show was on for like 50
can't
years.
Can't ask me questions because I got a cute dog in my hand.
Well, it's actually, that would be more an indictment of the reporters than Vrabel bringing the dog. Because if I'm a reporter, and look, I've done many news conferences in my life. If I'm a reporter at that news conference and I'm like, man, I've got to ask a question about Diana Rossini. But now I can't because look at that dog.
Dog's so cute.
I can't. How could I even fathom asking
Did Diana
a question?
Give you that dog? No.
It's more an indictment of the reporters, I think, than Vrabel with the dog. But I thought it was very funny. I'm like, Mike Vrabel, he's playing the game. He's bringing the dog. He's bringing the dog to the news conference. Sean says, F baseball. Those millionaires and billionaires make more money than God, but they couldn't care less about their fans.
I mean, I can't.
I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that's true. I mean, listen, if somebody wants to pay you that much to play a game, then so be it. You know?
Everybody's doing well.
They
exactly.
don't hate the player.
Everybody's doing well.
Hate the game.
But here's the thing. They've managed, and this is what I never understood, you know, with some fans. They've managed, billionaires managed to have you hate millionaires.
Have you seen the conspiracy theory? Have you seen
it? It doesn't make any sense
to
me.
But you are the chief conspiracy theorist on the program. Uh-huh. There's a conspiracy theory going around that baseball, is orchestrating all of these moves to the Dodgers to drum up support.
I
from
did wonder
fans.
That.
Yeah,
I'm not Mr. Conspiracy Theory.
I wouldn't
but
put that past them.
You want fans to want the salary cap? Just keep loading up the Dodgers behind the scenes, pulling strings. So fans say, this cannot stand. We must have a salary cap.
Treat everybody to the Dodgers.
I have wondered that.
Willie's putting his tinfoil hat on, folks.
If the Tigers owner said, go ahead, trade him to the Dodgers. This is what we want. We want it to look like they're the most loaded team and the system's unfair. I do think, though, there are more people that I can remember really defending the player side and like just placing blame on the smaller market teams for not being more like the Dodgers. But I'm like, this has been built in over decades. Mm-hmm. They can't do it the way the Dodgers do it because of the size of the market. It does limit you. So I just want to see better competitive balance. It's not about, hey, the players are getting screwed or the owners are getting screwed. Both sides are doing really well. The game is healthy. But how do we make it better for the fans and for the overall competitive balance? How do you want to decide a league? If we're in a fantasy league together and your budget is $450 million and my budget is $100 million, you have a big advantage. Mm-hmm. It's a no-brainer. Let's stop trying to do all these justifications saying the system is fair. It's not the same for everybody in baseball. You're clouding everybody's vision. We've had several people that are going right from the player's playbook and saying, well, anybody could have done that deal. Well, yes, but they also have $450 million in their payroll.
Connor Newt, what's coming up on the 6?
Lots of Titans talk, usual. Yeah. Cam Ward, Alec Iomanner shined today and has been shining all camp. We'll talk about what he needs to do. Lots of defensive talk. Lots of Titans talk in general. The Hounds of Justice are coming.
All right. Connor Newt and Nick Frazier, right?
Yes, okay. Dr. Crane.
Connor Newt and Nick Frazier will have you for the next hour on the 6 from 6 to 7 here on 102.5 The Game. We will be back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Get another Titans padded practice tomorrow morning. We will be out there. We will provide you all of the analysis that we can fit in 3 hours. Starting tomorrow at 3 o'clock, it's been a long time since I've been able to say this. Derek Mason, take us out.
Beloved, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team loves you. You hear that music. Don't you forget about us, because we will not forget about you. We will be back on these airwaves starting at 3 p.m. tomorrow on 102.5 Talking Tennessee Titans. And as I always say, we're going to be talking and
you're going to be listening.
Peace.
Right back at it.
Very good. Don't stop.